Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks so much for being here with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Maybe it's Wednesday evening where you are. Maybe it's even Thursday morning where you are. And as we like to say, wherever you are, we're glad you're here with us. I'm going to give out the number because we're taking calls today, 888-318-7884. Second hour, Dr. Matthew Bunsen will be here with us. And if you're at all a consumer of Catholic media, you know Dr. Matthew Bunsen. He's the vice president and editorial director of EWTN News. And we'll talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective with him. If you've got questions about what's going on in the Catholic Church, what's going on in the world, and you want to talk with someone who truly has the finger on the pulse, as they say, of all that stuff, and can answer questions from a truly informed Catholic point of view, Dr. Matthew Bunsen is your man, and you should call second hour. First hour, you know, we hear an awful lot about globalism. And I don't know that we all know exactly what it means, but we do know, you know, there's the global village and the world is getting smaller, and we know that the goods that we consume, the foods we eat, even the fresh foods that we eat now because of transportation and refrigeration and all these advances can come from very far-flung parts of the world to our table. So what's the Catholic response to all of that? What's the proper way to, or is there a proper way to live as a Catholic amidst all that globalism? Is there such a thing as localism? And what would it mean? And is it more Catholic than globalism? We will talk to Father Michael Rainier about all of that. He's the author of The Forgotten Language, How Recovering the Poetics of the Mass Will Change Our Lives, from Sophia Institute Press. He's formerly a pastor for the Anglican Church in North America. He was received into the Catholic Church about 14 years ago, ordained to the Catholic priesthood under the pastoral provision for former Anglican clergy, and he now serves the Archdiocese of St. Louis, where he lives with his wife and six children. Father Rainier, thank you very much for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
I could go on. You're also on the editorial board of Dappled Things magazine, and you write a weekly column for, I think you pronounce it, Aletheia.
That's how I say it.
And all that. But you're working on a new book, is my understanding. Is that correct? You're working on a new book?
So I have a chapter, and I have the book here with me. So this is out. This
it's
just
out.
That's from Sophia. I don't know if you can see that.
Localism. That, it's out now. Yeah.
It's out now. It's by Sophia. It's called Localism. And there's I'm going to say there's about 25 or so chapters from different authors in it. I have one chapter in it. I share space with Marco Rubio. Senator Marco Rubio is in it. Anthony Esselin has a chapter. Joseph Pierce. Dale Ahlquist put it together with the Chesterton Society.
Wow.
So
you couldn't get anybody good, huh? Just all that.
I don't know how I got in there. My dad was tickled about this, that I was in there with all these guys.
And
I
told a lot of heavy hitters.
You have to refer to me as a leading thinker now.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the truth, Father. We have thought that about you when we've had you on, that you're a leader.
Well, you're misinformed. I'm sorry.
So maybe you could, first of all, I do want people to call. We would love to have conversations with you. You don't have to be Catholic to call. Father spent most of his life not Catholic. So you're certainly welcome to call, 888-318-7884. If anything strikes your fancy as we're talking, we would love to take your questions or just have your contribution, 888-318-7884. So what is localism, and is it the cure for globalism? Is it a counterbalance? How does that all fit together?
I would say, if anything, it is living with common sense, as if your life matters, your neighborhood matters, your community matters, your family matters, your parish. It's all important. Localism is essentially another way of talking about this concept that you may have heard of, called distributism. So G.K. Chesterton, Hilaire Belloc, they would talk about distributism. And that word, they got it out of Pope Leo XIII's encyclical that came out in 1891, called Rerum Novarum. And in that encyclical, or that papal letter, the Holy Father discussed conditions of labor and what it meant to believe in something called distributive justice, right? So every human being deserves justice in their economic and working conditions. At the time, right, so think back to 1890s, particularly in places like Western Europe, the Industrial Revolution is coming into full swing. And so we have these conditions where men are working 16-hour days, it's unsafe, low pay, maybe even young children are being forced into work, and then they go home, their houses are dirty, the air is polluted. It's essentially a situation where you have these robber barons taking advantage of people and calling it capitalism and progress. And the Holy Father says, we need to think about this because this is not a just situation. So people hear about distributism, and I know when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, well, it's some political theory.
Yeah.
And I'm not a very political person. I'm not interested in politics or theories about politics. So for a long time, I didn't bother looking into what distributism is. And I think that's what Dale Alquist and some of the other Chestertonians thought. We need to remedy that because people are confused by the word. So let's refer to it more accurately as localism. It's the art of living locally and living with common sense and not collecting. So the Holy Father, Leo XIII, he says, look, we're opposed to two sorts of collectivization. We don't want to allow for the collectivization via government, right? So the government takes up all of the sources of income and economic activity and becomes the owner of it, so to speak, that then the government doles out to whoever's in good graces.
Right, right.
On the other hand, we don't want to see being in a situation where capital or production is collectivized by major globalist corporations, because that's also not healthy, because then we end up being wage slaves to these people who are our bosses, and they don't know us, they don't love us, they don't care about the products they're making, they're only seeking efficiency. And so we end up in this dehumanizing situation where we are nothing more than consumers for products. We work in places where we don't care about the product. And the Holy Father says the Catholic view, the Catholic principle, is to distribute ownership as widely as possible. Everyone gets to have a little piece of ownership of some productive thing, right? Whether it's your 20 acres or your spot in the union or the guild or your little side hustle, your garden in the backyard, your sewing machine that you can make clothes for your own family for. And that's really the principle. So it's not really an abstract theory. It's more than anything, it's an encouragement to live in the place that God has given you and to try to make that place beautiful and to have some ownership of it.
Again, 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. We're talking about this idea of localism. So the world you described of collectivism based on massive multinational corporations actually feels like the world most of us live in most of the time. So are you saying it would be preferable, for example, or maybe that you're saying we have a moral obligation to avoid, say, buying products at the super massive, you know, giant box store company, and buy it from the local family who runs a store?
So I think that's certainly something to think about. I try to shop local for those very reasons, because I know that I'm supporting a local economy, and the people, for instance, who jar my raw milk, they love their cows, they love their land, they're passionate about what they're doing. So I want to support that, and on to the extent that I can, I want to shop local. Now the objection, which I think is a fair objection, is that's way more expensive, right?
Yes, right.
So I can't do that. This is what people will say. And I think I might be one of those people who agrees with that. I do occasionally need to, either because I don't have enough money or because it's inconvenient, I need to, say, go to Amazon.com and get the book I need or get this thing I need because I need it in a certain amount of time and a certain price. I do try to limit that personally. But I think what's really important with this localist idea is that it's about a lot more than where we shop. It's about what we create. It's an invitation to create beauty and to take some control and some ownership in your own life. So sure, maybe we buy some fruits and vegetables from a local farmer and that's better. But what if I grew some fruits and vegetables for myself? Right? Or what if I, I'm a priest, so I have a desire for beautiful vestments to wear at the altar. I could go out and buy it from some large company, or this is what I actually do. I work with a local homeschooling mom who makes them for me. And she does a fantastic job and she loves the church. She's Catholic. Nothing makes her happier than to see her vestments being worn at the altar. And there's something really touching about that. And it's not necessarily more expensive.
888-318-7884 is the number. I'm delighted to get a chance to talk about this because I do think it's one of these things that in a certain sense, there's a kind of, how would I put it? Like a treadmill quality to modern life. And, you know, a lot of people, and certainly I put myself in this category, it's like, I got to get through the day sometimes. And I don't have necessarily the bandwidth, as they say. Even there, we use a kind of technical term for our mind, but I don't have the bandwidth to think about all this stuff and take all that time. And, you know, if somebody will just deliver it to my house from space or however Amazon does it, I think they shoot it from outer space into your house. I'm not sure how it works, but then I'm just going to do it that way. So we do have to take a break, but when we come back, and we'll get to the callers, but when we come back, I want to ask you about that, about is this really possible or is this just a little bit of pie in the sky? Can we talk about that when we come back?
Sure.
Father Michael Rainier is our guest this hour. Talking about localism, 888-318-7884 is the number.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
At EWTN Radio, you're family. And because you're a part of our family, we value your opinions on what you hear on EWTN. You can call our listener comment line 24/7 at 205-795-5773.
We value your comments, your questions, and any suggestions you may have to make EWTN Radio even better.
205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Father Michael Rainier is here with us to talk about localism, a new book called Localism out from Sophia Institute Press. He is one of those who contributed a chapter to the book. Try to think about these economic and kind of home making and I guess life making choices that we make. And one of the most striking things you said in that first segment, Father, and I think that this is so easy to forget, is that my life matters, that the things I do, the places I do business, they matter. There's a certain kind of hurry up, hurry up, hurry up attitude of modern life where it's, you actually feel like you don't matter.
Right. Yeah. And I think we're caught on a treadmill, yeah, so to speak, where people feel like they're rushed and they don't even have time to think about, oh, well, you're telling me to plant a garden, right? I barely have time to smash by, you know, on my McDonald's order and have them deliver it to me. So where do I get the time? And I do think that that's an issue that has to be confronted, because modern life, secular, atheist, like godless life, it's not humanizing. It's consumeristic. Mm. And it turns us into these machines that consume things, and it seeks efficiency. And so we are stuck in that. And it is very, very difficult. It's hard work to try to extricate ourselves from it. So I don't want anyone ever to feel bad and say, oh, I do this and I do that, and I shop local and I do all these things. And someone else is saying, look, I'm just trying to keep from financially drowning. I just work 14 hours a day. I think that we do what we have to do.
Yeah.
But I think what the church wants to offer is a more encouraging perspective of the world, that we can be more, and it can start in very, very small ways, such as simply slowing down a little bit and trying to be thoughtful about these things and understanding, as you said, my choices do matter. I don't just simply have to go with the flow.
There's something about the modern world, I think, that's almost designed to convince us that we don't matter. There's people make a lot of money on making other people feel small and insignificant and dependent. But, you know, the capitalists will say, look, if you just look at this capitalist system, it's a system of miracles. And it has produced so much. And I feel that we must concede that entirely. It is absolutely miraculous what it produces. But then I think we have to follow that up with the question, does it, among all these things that it produces, does it produce happy people? And I just don't think that the capitalist who is all about the miracle of the markets, I rarely see them engage with the question of, yes, but what are you producing as far as human beings?
Right. And we have to be careful, I think, to understand that the Catholic Church and localist principles and Leo the 13th, they're not saying free markets are bad.
Right.
I think it's actually the opposite. They're cautioning us against capitalism, which is a gathering up of large amounts of capital by a select few corporations. And the argument of capitalism is that then you have an economy of scale, and you could have more efficient and cheaper goods. And that is true to a certain extent. I'm sure we could all name examples where this works. So what Leo is saying, though, is that we don't have to destroy all these economies of scale that are working. He's simply saying the principle is subsidiarity. So what can be done at the local level should be, because it's better. Because at that point, I know who I'm doing business with. I understand that I'm in a community, and that community is very unique and beautiful and good. And I want to contribute to making that community even more of those things.
So in other words, the person who believes, as a Catholic does, in subsidiarity is not a fool. That person doesn't have to say, I need to get my gasoline made by the local homeschooling mom and not buy it from Shell Corporation or Chevron. No, you got to buy your gasoline from a giant corporation, because they're the only people who can make gasoline. But those things that you can have produced locally, you can make that choice as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes, so I was having this conversation last week with the local Chesterton Society here about this book. And someone brought up this argument of, well, who builds the airplanes, right? You need big companies to build the airplanes. And one of the other members there, and I thought, this is very astute, he said, well, who says there should be airplanes? I thought, well, that's a good point. Like, we take it for granted that it's a good thing.
Right.
But is it a good thing? I don't know. Is it a good thing that we have cars everywhere and we're all beholden to these expensive machines that are very, very dangerous, and I need my gasoline? Maybe we could be more thoughtful about the fact, oh, only massive corporations can produce these things. So if I can use them a little bit less, that could be a good thing. right? Yes. And as you say, it's not pie in the sky. It's not saying sell your car now and go live in a homestead off grid and you have to do this or you're not pure and Catholic and good enough. But it's simply saying let's be thoughtful about how we're consuming and if we need to be consuming this much stuff.
It's funny when you say living off the grid. There are TV shows about people living off the grid, which I find to be the most ironic thing in the world. Like, okay, we're millions of people are watching other people live off the grid on TV. I want to get you a call before because I got a million questions for you, but Tim's in Connecticut. Tim, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Father Michael Rainier.
Hi, Father Mike. Thank you very much for doing this. My thinking is that there has to be some consideration from a Catholic perspective of things like there are 800 million people in the world who are in dire need of food, and there's like 9 million deaths annually and 3 million children's deaths annually in that related to not having enough food. And it's an agrarian world among many issues. But you know, if we only look local, we're not really dealing with that whole aspect of, Jesus saying, when I was hungry, you fed me. And that we have to really reflect on that. There was a strategy that an economist called C.K. Prahalad had once written, which was called The Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid, Eradicate Poverty Through Profits. And it was the essential aspect of, you know, engaging multinational corporations with others in government and in communities and all to facilitate things like ecosystems and value chains and, you know, value chain coordination to facilitate jobs that can produce things. And we benefit from that in the global trade that brings the types of vegetables that are in the grocery store to us and all. So it's like, how do you balance the global suffering? And some of the stuff you see, you know, in the production in China and all, I mean, their people have benefited much by our materialism, consumerism, importing, et cetera. So there's a balance here, and, you know, I think that there's a beautiful song, not just whatsoever you do, but there's a song that is God of the Hungry, and it unfortunately says there are millions that need to be fed, and it's our greed that keeps them from being fed. So how do we balance that reality? And
okay,
one time
Tim.
I was...
Tim, I'm going to let Father answer, and then we'll come back to you. But how do we balance that, Father?
I think it's a great insight that we have here, which is that to strive to live locally and care about your own community, it cannot and it should not cancel out that missionary fervor that our Lord has instilled into us, you know, go into the world and preach the gospel. And also the charitable aspect of being a Christian, to care for those who are less fortunate for us than us. So it's one thing for us living in America to be talking about, oh, isn't it great to live local and go to the farmer's market and so on, while at the same time seemingly ignoring there are people in real trouble, right, in other places in the world who can't even put food on the table or afford to send their child to school, that sort of thing. And I think that point is very well taken. And of course, free markets and these corporations, as they go into other places in the world, they have good effects and they have bad effects. So they can certainly lift people out of poverty, and the free market has done that. But we also see other examples where corporations go into a country, make a crony capitalistic deal, suck all the resources out of the place, a few people locally there benefit, and you and I benefit the most, right, by being invested in the stock market. But I think localism is also a principle we can export in terms of our charitable endeavors. So it seems to me that some of the best missionary endeavors involve teaching people, well, here is how you live. We can assist you in living in your context, right? Let's show you how to raise goats and sell them on the fair trade market, sell the cheese on the fair trade market, or let's help you set up a coffee co-op, a fair trade coffee co-op, and then you and your local context will run it. It will be yours, and then you sell it into the co-op. So I think those localist principles are certainly exportable.
Tim, I said I'd come back to you. What do you think?
I think that's the brilliant thing. So right now we're working with places in the Philippines and Malawi and Haiti to actually do sweet potato production. And we've worked with the Daughters of Wisdom in Malawi to train people on sewing and on soap manufacturing through, you know, a YouTube training set up through a little projector.
Isn't that interesting?
That allow nuns to teach people. And it does exactly that. We're looking at then how do you help them get contracts for the work that they can produce now that they have those new skills. And the interesting thing is that you can go through the church, land in a country like Haiti, not speak a stitch of, you know, Creole, and the church already has such a network. So you only add a little bit of extra cost and focus and resources, and all of a sudden it makes a massive impact. And
Tim, I know you got an and there, but I got to let you take a breath because we are at the end of that segment and we have to take this break. Huge globalist corporations insist that you take a bottom of the hour break. And so we are subject to their whims. We'll be right back with more with Father Michael Rainier on localism on Catholic Answers Live. When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
As we read the Gospels, every Christian faces the question again and again, what does Jesus mean? Getting the answer right is critical to both growth in holiness and fruitful evangelization. Want to know Jesus better so you can introduce him to your friends? Then it's time to get serious about understanding his words. Why not join Catholic Answers for our 10th annual Apologetics Conference? Learn from me the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ, September 26th through 29th, right here in sunny San Diego. Learn from our guests, Dr. Scott Hahn and Kimberly Hahn, Dr. Ray Guarendi, Father Sebastian Walsh, Billy Junker, Father Paul Check, and, of course, all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. It'll be 4 days of fun, faith, fellowship, and a live radio show. Seats are still available, but going fast, visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today.
On the next More to Life, dealing with feelings.
Are you tired of the ups and downs? We'll help you master your emotional life.
That's on the next More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. One of the things about being Catholic is we're never entirely comfortable with the world's solutions. Our horizon is a different horizon. And so I think that's a kind of a freedom for Catholics, that we're very not a utopian undertaking. We know that the answers don't lie in this world, that ultimately the answers lie with God in his kingdom. But that doesn't mean that we can't do better. And constantly, I mean, certainly that's part of our calling, is to do better. And so in this modern world, which is so profoundly interconnected, a Hollywood star sneezes and they catch a cold on the other side of the world and all that stuff. But also business is so profoundly interconnected. The transportation networks are unbelievable. And so I can eat shrimp today in a restaurant here in Southern California that was still swimming in Vietnam a few days ago. It's an extraordinary world we live in. Well, how do we respond to that as Catholics? Our guest is Father Michael Rainier. We always enjoy having Father Michael Rainier on. He wrote a book called The Forgotten Language, How Recovering the Poetics of the Mass will change our lives. And he's part of a new book called Localism from Sophia Institute. Actually, both of those books are from Sophia Institute Press. And so we're talking about localism. And you're not proposing localism, Father, as some kind of utopian solution. You're just saying that we can make the world a more humane place.
I think so. In a happier place, a place where we take a little bit more joy in the work that we do, because we have ownership of the work that we do.
And like, I mean, I think one of the things that, like, when Leo wrote Rerum Novarum, and I think it was 1893 or if I am, or 1891, somewhere in the early 1890s, we didn't have, business wasn't quite what it is today. And certainly we have like employee owned businesses and that kind of thing. Does this fall into what you're talking about? Or are you talking about truly just locally owned mom and pop type stuff?
So I think what Leo XIII had in mind, and this almost certainly would fall under the localist umbrella. The difficulty with localism is it's not an abstract philosophy per se. So there's no manifesto out there you can read and then sign your name to and say, this is what it is, because it's really an appeal to, at the risk of saying it this way and sounding hopelessly romantic and idealistic, it's an appeal to a more romantic form of living. It's a philosophy of place, and the fact that your life is beautiful and where God has placed you, you can turn into a sort of a paradise and be a part of his redemptive process. So I don't think that you have to believe in anything in specific to say, oh, I'm a localist, other than this basic idea that it's good that we're here. Oh. And that we create along with God and have some ownership of our labor. Because that's what Leo XIII has in mind when he talks about justice, that the conditions are just of our labor, and they're free.
There's a kind of cast of mind that is not ideological in the sense that I believe in this and this and this. It's just a matter of the way, choosing a way of living that this is how we live here. This is how we take care of each other here. This is how we make things and do business with one another here.
Exactly. And it's very difficult, if not impossible, to define, because you are a part of your community, and your community will look different than mine. Your parish will look different than mine. Your family looks different than mine. These are all good things. These are all wonderful things. It's a beautiful diversity. And so we can't just say every community should look like this.
Right.
Because if that's what we're trying to argue, then we've missed the point.
It does seem to me that so many things that we identify as problems, like say the lack of biodiversity, like we're really destroying biodiversity. There a few types of apples dominate the entire world now, where there used to be hundreds of varieties of apples, for example, or one or two types of corn have completely taken over the Americas, where there used to be again hundreds of types of corn. The sense of the loss of languages, that the world is becoming less linguistically diverse. The sense of loss of culture because of, mass culture comes in. A lot of people were talking about that story the other day about some folks down in Brazil who had no internet access. For emergency services, they gave them internet access. And then what it immediately did was basically destroyed their community because people, especially young men, started living completely differently than they had been living before. So as far as preserving local culture and language, preserving the biosphere, if you want to call it that, or creation is a better way of saying it. It does seem to me localism addresses a lot of that as well.
That is all in the book, the localism book. I was amazed when I read through the different chapters how diverse the viewpoints were and how differently the authors were approaching the question. And I thought that is a great thing, that it's just 25 people writing from their local, unique perspective, and then we just kind of tossed it into a book and said, here it is.
How wonderful. How yeah. wonderful. That's kind of localism right there.
Exactly.
All right, let's go to Charles in Wichita, Kansas. Charles, thank you so much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Father Michael Rainier.
Yeah, my question is kind of more of a statement, but there'll probably be a question wrapped in here.
Okay.
I think it's really important to demarcate responsibility. I think that's what is the intent behind a lot of this conversation versus misdirecting culpability and assigning that to free markets and using a lot of collectivist terminology like the corporations or, you know, it's our responsibility, when we really have to get down to the fractionalism of what is responsibility versus how the culpability streams across these different vertical markets that then cause like the consolidation of apples and bananas and, you know, corn or whatever. It's important because there are forcing functions and mechanisms that make these things happen through a free market, but it isn't the free market itself. So going back to the rudimentary definition of capitalism is really key. And if you look at like what the church does in terms of what their products are, in terms of the services they provide, and then the people themselves and the good moral value foundational systems that are supposed to influence these markets, if that's not being done, then it's really hard to revert back to this localism. It's really hard to revert back to this. And then what ends up happening, because we don't demarcate responsibility from culpability, that's when we start saying, well, it's all your fault and there's nothing you can do about it. And so we aren't giving, I guess, our members tools to understand that they are not culpable for all these sins of the world. There is responsibility, but we just can't latch on culpability with it as if it's whitewashing and then therefore release them out to the world and it'll solve all the problems. And it just doesn't work. So if you could kind of address those topics, that would be really helpful.
All right, Father.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
What was the point?
Free markets or capitalism, they're not just going to fix themselves. This is how I think I understood
it.
I apologize if I misunderstood his point. They're not just going to fix themselves because we tweak a couple things here and there and say, oh, we'll buy from, you know, take responsibility here and don't take the culpability there. I wasn't quite sure if I followed all of it. But if the point is we need something more, we need virtue. Right. We need religion. We need family. And ultimately, we need to be living for the life beyond this one. If we don't have those things, then we will never figure out a just economic system or even come close to it. Because why would we? Why wouldn't we just have just giant corporations and consume and eat, drink and be merry and then die?
And there is the temptation to consume in ways that are dehumanizing to ourselves, just because the efficiency of markets makes consumption cheaper and cheaper, and then the kind of I don't know, the deadness of society makes us want to feel alive. You know, there's this desire that to have something of my own, because society is, I mean, even friendships, we see there are fewer friendships now, and each person has fewer and apparently less healthy friendships than they had, say, in the year 1920 or 24, let's go 100 years ago. So we consume, but then the consuming leads to more production, the production leads to more consuming, and it seems to me that there is a dehumanizing cycle there. Charles, I'm not going to pretend I understood exactly what you said, but did Father address it?
Yeah, he did. It comes down to, in my opinion, you have to reduce capitalism down to what it truly means, which is the free exchanges of products, goods, and services in exchange for free use of that time. And if we complicate it more than that and we start to assign blame,
I wonder, I have to be really honest with you, Charles, I don't know if you're properly defining capitalism. That may be one definition of capitalism, but I mean, it seems to me that there's also the danger of conflating freedom and free markets with capitalism. In the medieval world, the markets that were around the cathedrals, those were free markets. Those were not capitalist markets.
Two authors that actually defined the free markets to begin with, whenever the tea, India East Tea Companies, were causing all these issues in the first place, they said, no, this is what free market, the hand of the free market does. It's really simple. And as long as that is infused with moral actors, which is lacking, which I think that's what the point of the book is saying, these moral actors are lacking. So how do we produce more moral actors into this system? If that's fair.
Well, I think it's fair, but I mean, I do, I'll throw it to you, Father, because there's a basic problem. It seems to me there's a quite basic problem in that way of thinking. But I let me just put it this way, that wealth provides us with temptations. That's what wealth does. The wealthier you are, the more temptations that you face. You make a wildly wealthy society, people are going to give in to temptations. So you can't just say that, producing wealth is a morally neutral thing. No, if you become a society about wealth, that's not morally neutral. That's quite morally dangerous. Father?
I mean, I think that's actually right. I remember, this is taking me back. I'm a little, I'm quiet here because it's taking me back to a debate I think I had when I was probably 19 years old about whether capitalism was morally neutral or not. And this debate raged and raged and we never got anywhere. But I tend to think that however we define it, there is a cost to be paid for producing such staggering wealth. And however you want to sort of tease that out and say this is moral or this is immoral or what have you, we do have to be clear-eyed about that, that the capitalist system has its costs, and those costs are human costs. And so our responsibility is to not simply go along with it, but to understand what this system is into which we've been born, how it's affecting us for good or ill, and then to sometimes maybe make very difficult choices to say, I'm not participating in this aspect of it because it's not good for me. I don't like what I've become.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, in a certain sense, less satisfying than joining a movement or having a manifesto or something, but it's more human just to say, I'm not going to live this way. I'm not going to be about the square footage and the brand of car and the clothing brands. I'm going to be about something else. That's not an ideology.
And that's always been my approach. That's simply the way I think. So you very graciously let people know about my book, The Poetics of the Mass, a couple times already. But that's how that book breaks down the mass itself, too, which is this is not an ideological argument for this kind of mass is good, that's bad. It's more a poetics. It's a concrete examination of how we interact with the world around us and how we make our way through life with an eye towards transcendence. So it's not as easy as saying, I voted for the right political party or I support the right political system by putting this flag in my yard. It's a personal call to responsibility. How do I use my money? How do I earn money? How do I spend it? Do I have beautiful things in my house or have I been acquisitive?
Yeah.
Do I spend beyond my means, right? Am I gracious and charitable, or have I become greedy? These are questions that are very personal, and I think each and every one of us should be asking ourselves those questions.
We'll take a very quick break. We'll be right back and continue those questions. More callers on the line. Our guest is Father Michael Rainier. We're talking about localism on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1981. EWTN begins transmitting 4 hours a day to 60,000 homes. The network will exist solely on viewer contributions, as there will be no advertising and no fundraising.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Certainly one of the pillars of Catholic social teaching is this idea of subsidiarity, which we talk about quite a bit in the Catholic Church. Well, I suppose if you're going to talk about subsidiarity, then that you're going to end up with a conversation about localism, because how else are you going to bring things to the proper level if you won't allow the local economy to do what the local economy can do, allow local people to do what local people can do? Our guest to talk about localism, and you can get the new book from Sophia Institute Press. You said Dale Alquist put it together?
He did.
Everything he does is fantastic. So let's just say that's, I know this is going to be a great book.
That's great.
Get it from Sophia Institute Press. They do wonderful work, too. I want to get this caller on with you, though, Father. Father Michael Rainier is our guest. Adam's in Wilmington, Ohio. Adam, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Father.
Well, it's more of a comment.
Okay.
I was listening to the program, in particular tonight's episode, and I'm driving through the local neighborhood, and sure enough, there's a kid's lemonade stand. And I had like a prod or something and said, you know what, I need to stop. And sure enough, did.
Oh, so, well, first of all,
striking
a blow against Big Lemonade, which has totally dominated the market, but also meeting your neighbors and supporting the kids. That's beautiful, Adam. Father, well, let's get your response, then we'll come back to Adam.
I mean, I have the same response, which is it's wonderful. It's all wonderful, right? The kids are out. They're taking ownership. They're providing a product. And I'm sure it was delicious.
Oh, you haven't been to my neighborhood. Those kids in my neighborhood. Adam, what do you think?
Well, it was good. I do remember back in the day when lemonade was a quarter. Probably was cheaper even earlier, but it was a dollar a glass.
That's the going price in Wilmington, Ohio. $1 a glass for, I like these kids. They're not selling themselves short. They got to squeeze all those lemons or dump some powder into a pitcher. One of those two things. I am so happy to get your call, Adam, because I do think that this is what Father is talking about. That, well, I'll let you, Father, follow up. How does this represent a kind of localism?
It sounds insignificant, right? It's just, a lemonade stand. But I think it is a wonderful example of localism. And that sort of thing can be replicated in every house. Not just necessarily a lemonade sale, but hey, you know, we have a sewing machine. My 15-year-old daughter went upstairs last week. Didn't see her all day. I just heard the sewing machine going. She came downstairs with a dress. And actually, it was really, really well made. It fit her. It was perfect. She made a dress.
Wow.
So she took ownership. She worked at a craft. I think anyone with enough attention and patience could learn a craft like that. Embroidery, sewing, gardening in your yard. Something as simple as becoming good at some of the little things you have to do around the house, right? Taking ownership of your environment. And anyone can do it, and I think everyone should do it. One of the examples I use in the book, there's a guy named William Morris, who Chesterton liked. William Morris is a little bit before Chesterton's time. He was really active in the 1860s, 1870s. But William Morris, he's the guy who a lot of people love him still for his designs for wallpaper and fabrics. He founded a company that's still around. But one of the things that he and his friends did when they were very young, he hung out with that group of people called the Pre-Raphaelites, Burne Jones and Christina Rossetti and so on. They just went to the parish around the corner from his house, and they said, we want to paint and decorate the whole parish. We just want to do all the paintings on the walls and do the stained glass, and we'll figure out how to do it. They didn't know how to do a lot of it, but they learned as they went. And it was their church. It was the neighborhood church, and they wanted to make it beautiful with local labor. And that's a small example of what a community can do.
Yeah.
And it starts with something maybe like a lemonade stand, but then it becomes Chartres Cathedral, right?
Yes.
In France, that is a product of a local effort. There were no multinational corporations building that project. That was free labor from the local community, and they learned the craftsmanship. And what's so wonderful about it is that they are doing these things out of love. I want to make a beautiful dress because I love beautiful things. So I want to decorate our church because I love the church. I want to produce vegetables that I can sell to the neighbors because I love my community and I want to share my vegetables with them.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things being here near the Mexican border, that Mexican people are much more likely to do than Anglo people here in the U.S. is have a whole lot of vendors outside after Mass. And I love that. I think it's fantastic. Like, there's, I know this woman who can cut, not papaya, what's the other? Mango. I've never seen this most amazing skill with a knife to sell you this mango after Mass. But to me, I feel like, have I gone back to the Middle Ages where you come out of church and the because everybody knows you're going to church, there's just a marketplace out there? That seems to me very local.
I love that. I wish there were people waiting outside of my church after. Yeah. I live in St. Louis, and so it's like 95 degrees right now. I'm wearing four layers of clothing up at the altar at Mass, and the lights are hot, so I'm all sweaty and tired at the end of Mass on Sunday. Nothing would make me happier than if I came out the door of the church and someone was there with a, you know, homemade fruit, right?
Yeah.
That they've made for me, or a slushy. Put a slushy into my hand, and that would be great. You know, you pray hard, and you offer to God a beautiful Mass, and then you come out and you enjoy each other's company, and you share some products with each other, things that you've made that really come from the heart.
Yeah, and people, maybe their thing is they can carve, or somebody else's they can sew, and somebody else's they're amazing with mangoes. You know, it just
and you can trade too. So my kids are in a homeschool co-op. And they had a day where the kids made everything.
Oh,
and I was
cool.
I was amazed how good it was. So one of these kids, he had an uncle or a relative that worked at a nearby airport. And they confiscate all the knives and the things at the airport at security. So this kid talked his relative into giving him that box of confiscated weaponry. And then he went and just sold it to all the homeschool boys. And I thought, this is genius. There's no overhead.
It's probably violating like a lot of laws.
Possibly.
But yeah. Yeah. My thought there, who's getting all the whiskey and gin and wine bottles that people, oh, I forgot, you can't carry liquids on the plane, and they got to turn those over. Father, it's just been a great opportunity to talk with you. Adam, thank you very much. I love your call so much because I think it was exactly in the spirit of what Father is promoting. So thank you for the call.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, I'd love to see more. But I'd have to tell you, there is a kind of, I think, Father, there's a kind of insularity that comes from suburban life where people don't like, they want everything to be beige. And we get in a bad habit. As a matter of fact, some of these housing developments that they make, big, beautiful houses and all that stuff, there's like they make it a rule of the neighborhood. You got to be in this certain range of beige, for example, you know. And I think that is not at all. It just seems inhuman to me. Like, have a little color. You're going to be okay. We're all going to survive it if somebody paints their house a color that you didn't think of.
So you see the difference in architecture. So a certain kind of architecture that's made today, often in the suburbs, but I live in the city, and I think new developments in the city suffer from the same flaw, which is that sort of beige mentality, as you put it. And then people move into it and they think, oh, this is really bland and boring and I'm not comfortable here. So they try their best to decorate it. They want to ornament it and make it and feel like a home, which is, you know, good for them. I think that's the right instinct. But one of the things that I don't remember if it was Chesterton himself who pointed this out, or maybe it was Ruskin, who was a guy who wrote about the Gothic. He has a book called The Stones of Venice, where he says Gothic architecture, this local architecture, ornamentation is not the afterthought.
Yeah.
Because they didn't care about efficiency when they built it. They built it to be beautiful, right? The very bones of the buildings are beautiful. So even if the paint washes off over the years and flakes away and you have a gray building and it's not quite what it was supposed to be originally, it's still beautiful. And that's the product of a localist mindset.
Yeah. I always think about, whenever I think about the George Weigel's column that he's written for years, The Catholic Difference, I love that title. There is a Catholic difference. And in thinking about all of these things, I really appreciate you coming on here and encouraging us to be different, be a little bit different. It's very humane. But I'll tell you what, I will have to put you to work now. I have to ask you if you will give us your blessing and our listeners your blessing before you go, Father.
Sure, absolutely. Dominus vobiscum.
Et cum spiritu tuo.
Benedicto Deo omnipotens patris et filii et spiritus sanctus.
Amen. Father Michael Vernier, you can, I guess everything he writes goes to, my sense is it all goes to Sophia Institute Press. Is that right? You could go to Alatea too.
They've been publishing me so far. Yeah. And there's also Dapple Things and Alatea. So.
Well, thank you so much, Father.
I appreciate it.
All right, coming up, Dr. Matthew Bunsen is going to be here. We're going to talk about the news. If you've got questions about the church in the news or what the church thinks about the news, Dr. Matthew Bunsen is your guy. 888-318-7884.